to the Tippy Tappy Sports podcast. You're with the brothers Timms, and it's been a monumental day in the Cricket World Cup. But before we get to arguably the greatest innings of all time, hello, Aaron. How are you? How did you celebrate this ridiculous victory overnight?
How are you?
Nice.
How did I celebrate it? Well, I celebrated it with with a tweet, actually, that I thought was quite well received from the official Tippy Tappy Sports podcast, Tippy Tappy Sports account.
Would you like to read that tweet out?
Yeah. Wow. That Glenn Maxwell innings was the most memorable performance by an Australian with a single leg against Afghanistan since Ben Robert Smith's last photographed beer at the fat lady's arms. Pause for RTs. One like for that from a porn account.
Okay.
Yeah, just one porn like. So doing numbers with that particular insight.
Really shifting the needle.
Many calling it the greatest tweet of all time.
Yes, the greatest sort of single-handed tweet of all time.
Good call, Timsy. now, I tuned in about sort of shortly before he scored his century, because I sort of thought I saw that, you know, because it was like 7 for 91 or whatever. And so
yeah,
I was like, yeah, they're obviously not going to win. And it was the morning here. So I was like, well, they're not going to win. You know, it's obviously they're going to lose this, but they'll probably still win against Bangladesh. So they're going to make the semifinals and probably still play South Africa. But yeah, he started. Started hitting some boundaries, and I thought, you know, we could be on here. We could be on. So just sort of put it on in the background, and then he just started sort of after he hit his century, he just he lost mobility. Obviously, he started cramping up, and his back seized up, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So he was just kind of standing there with his feet rooted to the spot, just sort of, you know. Very much the style of kind of
Chris Gayle,
you know, under 9A's. No, I was going to say sort of like zero footwork. You know, it's vindication in many respects. Vindication for those of us who took a no footwork approach to batting as kids. Just kind of swinging through the line and hoping for the best, and not even taking particularly on some of those boundaries, not even taking particularly big swings. It was all just like, it was like ping pong style. It was like all pure timing. Wrist strength.
Timing
and wrist strength. I mean, the sort of reverse paddle for six was ridiculous. And some of those like leg side flicks for six, where just standing there kind of leaning like onto the ball and then just, you know, just a flick, just a VVS Laxman style flick, six.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Good to watch.
Obviously, we have previously piled on Glenn Maxwell. It's like not only was he ridiculous in terms of falling out of the golf cart and concussing himself so much, so badly that he had to like miss a game.
Well, in retrospect, probably good preparation for batting, you might say.
Well, yeah. I mean, which 18-hole links course are they going to celebrate this victory in Mumbai with?
Yes.
And I guess, you know, it's hard. It's hard sort of not to now sort of. I mean, this is very much a redemption story of Glenn Maxwell, because he's, you know, like he hasn't done anything like this impressive and this extraordinary, obviously, kind of ever. I mean, he'll do sort of breakout innings.
Apart from the century that he scored in 40 balls earlier in the tournament.
Well, no, but I mean, I'm talking about him, you know, in the context of this tournament, in the context of his entire career, right? Like he does good stuff. He does good stuff. He'll play well, you know, in games that don't count. He's very much a Shane Watson kind of performer in that respect. But he's just, it's like it's all kind of come together, you know, in a couple of sublime innings.
Yeah, and he's not before time. You know, he's 35 years old. Maybe that's just what it takes. I mean, people expect these types of players to sort of perform explosively, you know, in their youth or whatever, but maybe just need some sort of the wisdom of middle age to put together that type of innings, you know. Like, yeah. I mean, Usman, I mean, we're very much in the sort of the age of the kind of 40-year-old professional cricketer, aren't we? I mean, you know, between Usman and now this bloke,
James Anderson.
Jimmy Anderson, who are sort of in the back end of their 30s and into their early 40s, who are essentially playing the best cricket of their careers, you know, in the case of Usman and Glenn Maxwell. So maybe we just need to ditch youth as the basis of, well, I mean, we basically have, of course, with the team that we're playing with, but, you know, just put our faith in old blokes. Maybe old blokes are the future.
Yeah. I mean, they clearly are. Like, it doesn't.
Because also, I think there's always been there's generally this kind of presumption that when you're young, you play, you know, without fear. But like, this type of innings was an innings completely without fear, and he's just sort of throwing his hands at the ball and hoping for the best. I mean, he had a lot of chances, obviously. They dropped a sitter when he was on 33.
Yeah.
And, you know, he took advantage of that. But that type of batting. I mean, you've played some great innings yourself, Damien. You know,
perhaps you could give us
some insight into what it takes both mentally and physically to put together that type of knock.
I mean, you just get sort of very hot. I think back to my to the 77 I scored on Weigel 2. I remember feeling very hot.
you were striking it at well over 40.
Definitely, like a strike rate, probably in the high 40s at that point. But you know, but the nervousness that comes as you inch towards 50, you know, it's hard.
Yeah. He was like really sweating it out massively.
Yeah, I mean, but that's Mumbai. I mean, it's
local knowledge.
Meteorological soup. Yeah, it's ridiculous. I mean, you could even see from when Stark was bowling. I mean, the guy looked exhausted, like from ball one.
I mean, we'll get to Stark in a bit because there's obviously a lot to discuss about his performance and place in the side and so on and so forth. Where would you rate this innings, having just watched the highlights? I think 5 minutes ago. Where would you rate this innings in the pantheon of highlights that you've viewed over your cricket watching career, Damien?
If I had to pick one memory, I'd pick them all. this is the greatest moment by an individual, particularly in the context of the match, right? Like,
because it was gone, and you know, and there was something on the line. It wasn't a dead rubber, like we were still playing for qualification in the semis.
No, exactly. So, you know, I mean, obviously he came out, the first ball he faced was a hat-trick ball, so they were already, you know, whether five for 45 or whatever it was when he came So you know, so it really was crumbling to a ridiculous amount.
Go on.
No, please. After you.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, would you, I mean, people are saying, well, this is the greatest one day innings of all time. And, you know, it kind of raises the question of, well, what are the other great one day innings? I mean, obviously Bevo's final ball boundary to win the game against whoever it was, West Indies. You know, like that. I can remember, I guess, Ponting's century in the 2003 final. Gilchrist, I think, scored a century in 2007 in the final.
Yeah.
They're all like pretty good. But apart from that, I'm like, I mean, I guess all the innings in the South Africa, the 4-3-4 game against South Africa and whatever it was, 2006 or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's kind of like the dawn of the era of power hitting. But I mean, I can't really remember that many others. And you know, I mean, people saying it's the greatest innings of all time. I mean, Is it better than, you know, Colo's 80 not out at his Bucks? I think it's a question we really need to ask, because people have, you know, he scored, I think, four sixes or maybe five in that particular innings.
What was his strike rate?
I think he was striking at over 100, actually, because he put the whole score sheet on, so you can see how many balls he faced and, you know, all the boundaries and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, and actually, just on the question of Colo, I noticed, because I was watching the, is keeping an eye on the a very busy day here at 1821 George Street. I was keeping an eye on the Guardian over by over report, which Colo was writing, and then at the end, you know, when Maxwell sort of hits four boundaries in a row, whatever it was, to finish the match off and score his double century, which kind of adds to the poetry of it all. Of course,
yes.
The fact that he sort of had these, let's get 15 runs off this over, and you know, he wasn't that he was kind of trying to kick the strike, so that he was doing all the scoring and Pat Cummins was just scoring singles. But it's like for that final over, I saw that Colo said, you know, shouldn't make this about me, but Glenn is my friend. I like him a lot. Glenn's my friend. Congratulations, Colo. You despite not wanting to make it about yourself, you just did. So yeah. Another victory there for Colo. And I think his role in all of this, okay, Pat Cummins was, you know, the batting partner out in the middle, but the real partner in this innings was Colo.
It's if Australia wins this World Cup, it's thanks to Adam Collins.
Yeah, no, it is. Yes, but you think it's the best innings of all time? Well, you don't have any thoughts on that?
No, I'm just reflecting on some of the innings. I mean, is it better than, you know, say like Gilchrist's century in the Ashes at the Wacker that caused
the double century?
Was it a double century?
Was it a double century? I thought it was. But anyway, I could be wrong. You know, but
was that Jared Kimber who was? Or Ben Kimber, where somewhat Kimber, who was writing about, you know, Mathematica Principe.
that was Alex Brown.
Alex Brown.
One of the great all-time sort of, you know, intellectual openings for a match report, for a sport report. It kind of just referred to Isaac Newton in the first paragraph. Get that out of the way nice and early so that people know you're an intellect. Well, that innings, of course, was, I think, overshadowed by Nathan Assel's double century, which was scored a ball faster or something. I mean, you know, Assel's got to be up there, right?
Assel.
Don't even remember what that guy looks like. But, people are saying, yes, well, that's a very good question. We'll find that out in time for the next episode, but in a Trump intonation. but I mean, so well, people are saying, well, you know, it's up there with Stokesy's inning at Headingley. You know, yeah, I think this one was actually better because he was not just like. He was not just injured and totally immobile. Like, I can't stress enough that his feet were not moving. And there were all these overs that they traversed where they would have ordinarily taken, you know, singles and twos based on the shots that Maxwell was playing, but they just weren't running. Yeah. But it was also that, like, when he was hitting the ball, he was like seizing up. He was like sort of like trembling, you know, sort of like gyrating on the floor, sort of. You know, convulsing.
And he
still, you know, scored this ridiculous double century with all these insane sort of paddles and
flicks
ramps
and tricks. And
sweeps. Yeah, I mean, it was a classic flicks and tricks. And it was mostly flicks. It was mostly, I would say, 90% flick, 10% trick.
Yeah.
So I would say it's the best innings that I've seen.
Certainly, certainly supersedes, say, like Dean Jones's 100 in Madras in 1986, where obviously that's probably the last Australian to have seized up on the field, but continued batting.
That also had the aspect of psychological warfare from his own captain, which did make it kind of special in that sense. You know, it's not like Pat Cummins was saying, "Yeah, come on, mate, just get up and." Gavin, and play some shots.
So if you won't do it, we'll get someone else to.
We'll get a Queenslander or something.
We'll get a real Australian here.
Exactly. And the days of sort of playing on those loyalties, the sort of state rivalries, I think are kind of gone in the Australian team. I mean, people have always said about Glenn Maxwell, well, he suffers from the sort of, he gets snubbed, he gets the cold shoulder because he's from Victoria, because he's not part of the New South Wales Mafia. And I mean, I guess there is a good question, which we could discuss now about, you know, the opportunities that he's had at test level. I've always had the impression that he has had quite a few opportunities at test level. Certainly not, you know, in the Sean Marsh bracket, but, you know, he's had a few opportunities and he's always kind of failed, but I mean, he's obviously a special batsman, and maybe it's just time to bring him back in, you know.
Yeah,
drop Smith, get rid of Smith. Smith's done. Hand-eye coordination's gone. He's finished. Just bring Maxwell.
Yeah, he doesn't have the explosive power of someone like Maxwell. And
yeah,
you know, I mean, what this also shows up is that someone like Stoinis is just okay. I mean, he's Stoinis is like
he's like the cut price Maxwell.
Exactly. He is, you know, I mean, he's the Aldi version, right? Like, it's like, if you want the real thing, go to what's the fancy, what's that ridiculous, fancy grocery chain in LA? Erewhon or whatever it is.
Oh, Erewhon. Yeah. Go to Erewhon. Yeah.
If you want Maxwell, go to Erewhon.
Yeah. If you want Aldi, go to Stoinis. I mean, it's cheap, it gets the job done, but is it really at the level that you need it to be?
Is it
optimize your own performance?
I mean, you know, how much greatness. Reverse osmosis water do you get at Aldi? None.
Yeah. Exactly. Where are the what's another one of those types of things? Where are the activated almonds? Where are the goji berries? When was the last time Stoinis can't produce the cricketing equivalent of a goji berry. He's there producing, you know, bloody.
They can't even do a
plums. Yeah. Just sort of, you know, just spoiled plums.
Yeah. Yeah. He's cooked. They're all cooked.
Yeah, but he was quite. Well, I thought he was underused as a bowler. Maybe we could talk about the bowling as well, because that does seem. You know, in our last episode, which of course is not aired yet, we've done this as a special emergency episode because we've just been thrown, you know, the greatest one day innings of all time, and possibly at a moment when there will be no more one day innings to discuss, you know, because this format of the game could be done once this World Cup is over. But
this innings might single-handedly revive or resurrect or you know, continue, prolong the life of the 50 over format, because you could not have done this in a T20 game. Like, it would have been, you know, there is nothing as dramatic, there's nothing as epic as Maxwell's innings could ever possibly take place given the shortened nature of the T20 format. So
it's also the fact that he did it from the previous double hundreds in one day cricket have all been by openers, I think. So for him to come in at number five or whatever he is, and do it is even more special. Yeah. So I mean, maybe you're right. Maybe people will be like, wow, this is a format of the game that is special and unique in its own right. But I mean, it's still going to suffer from not having the weight of, you know, franchise cricket behind it, and sort of just being this kind of appendage to the international calendar that doesn't really, that sort of has to fit in around test cricket and T20s, the way we've discussed on previous episodes. But I was going to say, you know, in the last unaired episode that will be sort of in the sort of director's cut DVD that we'll be releasing of the Tippy Tappy World Cup podcast, we were saying, you know, Australia hasn't put together a complete performance yet. There have been good individual batting performances, good individual bowling performances, but there hasn't been like the complete batting and bowling performance. And this obviously was yet another example of that, of course.
It was.
And Maxwell's performance kind of papered over many of the cracks, especially in the bowling, I thought, because the Stark, I mean, I went back and sort of watched the first 10 overs of the Afghan innings, and I mean, Stark is becoming a real problem for Australia in this World Cup, I think, because he's just not getting it done in the first couple of overs. And yeah, you know, he went for 70 or something, so and didn't take any wickets, so
or took one or two or whatever it was.
Took one wicket, yeah, so one for 70. I mean, it's like you got to get more out of your strike bowler. And Stoinis only bowled one over for some reason, which I didn't really understand.
Yeah.
Travis Head bowled more than Stoinis did. I mean, you know, obviously it seemed like it was a sort of spin friendly wicket, but again, yet again, another thing that makes Maxwell's innings so spectacular is that he just kind of completely neutralized the Afghan spin attack, which is obviously very, very proficient. I just don't know, like, what's going on with the bowling. The bowling seems like a real problem. Pat Cummins is not bowling particularly well either.
No.
Josh Hazlewood has been the best of the paces.
And even then, he you know, he's not actually that well suited to subcontinental conditions, because he doesn't really swing the ball. Okay, he just maintains that sort of nagging line and length. But if the wicket's pretty batting friendly, as it seemed to be last night, and maybe that's generally a feature of the wickets at Wankhede Stadium, you're then kind of reliant on Zampa, and you talk about sort of papering things over. I mean, obviously Zampa, well, I think Zampa's still the leading wicket taker within the World Cup, but you know, when he doesn't fire in the way that he didn't last night, like you do sort of end up with just sort of taking wickets by default, in that, you know, they're only ever outfield catches, right? Because the batter has not middled the ball in the way that they normally would to get it over the fence. So I think you're right that Maxwell's batting not only papers over the bowling performance, but obviously even the rest of the Australian batting, which was woeful.
Yeah.
In that, you know, I mean, Head is, since his century, has been rubbish. Inglis has kind of been rubbish. Like, I don't
understand what Inglis is doing in the side. Like, he's obviously brought in to be an improvement on Carey, but I don't think he is. I think he's worse. He seems worse.
Yeah.
Like, at least Carey has a bit of credit in the bank from, you know, like the last World Cup and the T20 World Cup and all that kind of stuff. Like, you know, he has been pretty good on occasion. Whereas Inglis is just sort of garbage.
He is. He's not a marked improvement on Carey, and he has that ridiculous facial hair, so that he looks like another stinky angler. Like, I know he's meant to bring vibes to the team and all that kind of crap, but I mean, guys who just bring vibes to the team sort of died with Rob Quaney, like, you know, back in the early 2000s or whatever.
Yeah, and you know, so yeah, Tony Dottomade. And
Trevor Holmes.
I mean, yeah, well, all the stinky Anglo credit, you want to be putting that into, well, as it turns out, pretty much every other member of the team, but you know, especially Glenn Maxwell. I mean, it's sort of Warner, stinky Anglo, Head, stinky Anglo, maybe less stinky. I mean, Warner definitely, Head. I mean, none of these are typical stinky Anglos. I think we'll get to who that is. That'd be more sort of Steve Smith, Marnus Labuschagne.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, you probably can imagine.
And then Hazlewood. Hazlewood, I think, has major stinky Anglo vibes. And so we need to be distributing that more. Basically, we need more old blokes and fewer stinky Anglos. That's what we're looking for in this Australian side. I'd love to see Glenn Maxwell come in and open the batting in the test side. You know, we don't need to bring in Cameron Bancroft. We tried him. He cheated.
That's right. He cheated, and then he went on a current affair and wore a tank top. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, there are some crimes that should not be forgiven. And
exactly.
Yeah. So the bowling's a bit of a mess. The wicket keeping position is still kind of sort of wallowing in mediocrity.
Yeah.
The batting is very up and down and dependent on kind of explosive individual brilliance. But I still think
it all points to a World Cup victory.
Yeah, exactly. That's sort of why it's kind of like, you know, Glenn Maxwell sort of falls off the cart and gets a concussion and then comes out in his next match and scores the most blistering, insane one day innings of all time. So yeah, I do think there's sort of something brewing about this team where if anyone's going to knock the Indians off, it's going to be this side. So I'm kind of living, you know, dangerously with the expectation that we're actually gonna beat the South Africans in the semis now.
Well, we know that they will choke. Like they've gotten their sort of thrashings out of the way, so they've been thrashed by the Indians. But they are due a close choke.
Yeah, classic sort of pool stage bullies who can't get it done in the knockouts. So where do you think I was talking you know to some mates of mine, and we were trying to sort of, you know, we were reflecting on the fact that
who are your mates?
Just a few old mates of mine. We're reflecting on the fact that we're reflecting on a couple of things. Well, first the thing that I already brought up that you didn't seem too interested in discussing, which was this idea of, you know, well, why didn't Glenn Maxwell get more chances in the team? And I was like, well, I think it's because you know, Steve Smith didn't like him. I remember a lot of press conferences where Steve Smith was like, yeah, Maxie, yeah, he tries to do his, you know, his little tricks, and he has shut up, Steve Smith. I mean, what have you ever done as a batsman? And so I think there was this thing of like, well, Smith doesn't like him, and maybe that's a bad thing. But then, well, but Maxwell is friends with Colo. Like, Colo invited him to his wedding. So maybe he is a bad bloke. And it's difficult to know whether he's a good bloke or a bad bloke, which is an interesting thing to reflect on. The other point, and I'd be interested to get your thoughts on this one, is kind of just the fact that this innings was played kind of in the middle of the night in Australia, and how different it might have been as a social media experience if it had been happening in real time, a la Ashton Agar scoring, you know, 98 in the first test
in
2013. We all remember when that happened, because that actually was happening, I think, just as people were going to see, because we did really badly in the first innings, obviously, and he saved us and brought us back to a respectable total. And, you know, there was so much, that was the Facebook era. You know, I remember Tom Glasson, doing a great status update that was sort of predicting, you know, that the headlines in the British tabloids the next day were going to be Agar the Horrible. that did huge numbers. And I remember thinking at the time, wow, that is some really sophisticated material. It was a much more innocent time, of course. We hadn't been debased by, you know, Twitter and, you know, cancel culture and The Voice and War on Gaza. You know, Trump, the pandemic, many other things have happened over the past 10 years.
But Sam Bankman-Fried.
SBF, you know, he's Caroline Ellison, you know, all of those things. Do you feel sad that you missed out on seeing this innings in real time?
I do. But I wonder if Maxwell has one of those personalities where he doesn't actually like performing, you know, in a time zone that's sort of friendly to his home country. You know, a bit like sort of how Sam Stosur couldn't perform at the Australian Open, but was
very good at the French.
Very good at the French and good at the US Open.
It's
like this kind of a home ground pressure.
Yeah, or like Josh Kennedy, so good in the Bundesliga 2, but couldn't get it done at national level for us.
No.
Apart from
his
good
goal
at Suncorp Stadium.
He did. Josh Kennedy, I think, did score the goal that led to our qualification in the
2014.
Was it 2014? It was the header against Qatar.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It was a good header. I mean, he was very tall, so good that he put that Fine. Height to some use.
But in terms of Maxwell and his, you know, him getting a run in the test team, I don't know. I mean, I think it seems to be another one of these things. And maybe you know, it's now a different regime. It's a lot more inclusive. There are many more hugs going around now that Cummins is in charge, and it's very much, you know, a team of his making. Maybe Maxwell should come back in. I mean, he's not. Put it this way,
we just don't have many other options.
But I mean, like, there's no. Is Cameron Green a better option than Glenn Maxwell? Probably not.
What, as the all rounder? I mean, he's always been the build for the future kind of thing. We're going to build a team around him. He's going to be an amazing all rounder of the, you know, just an incredible, you know, stinky Anglo, very tall, 200 centimeters, et cetera, et cetera.
Great wingspan. I think he's too, like, yeah. His wingspan's like 400 centimeters.
Same as, you know, Ben Simmons, a Simmons-esque wingspan.
Yeah.
I mean, he has, you know, obviously he's sort of looked good in parts. I mean, you know, he's had some of those sort of destructive 60 or 80 odd innings, kind of in the second innings against a tiring attack at the Wacko or something like that. Yeah. He's sort of a specialist of that type of batting.
Yeah.
But his batting has kind of fallen off. His bowling's still pretty good, I think, at test level. But
yeah, the pace off.
Yeah. I'm not sure that you'd take Glenn Maxwell over Cameron Green. I just think you'd take him as an opener. And you know, open with him and Usman, just have two old blokes, you know, using the accumulated wisdom of years to really put Australia into positions of strength in each test match. I'd love to see that. You know, yeah, it's either Cameron Bancroft, Marcus Harris, like who else? Who is there?
Yeah, like, I mean, who cares? I mean, neither of those sort of immediately scream, you know, winner or anything like that. So you might as well
banging down the door to selection.
Yeah, certainly not Simon Katic. Katic.
they're no Katic. They're not Katic quality.
So Maxwell, I mean, I never would have thought that this podcast would turn into a vehicle for the return of Glenn Maxwell to the test team. Like, you know,
and this podcast will make a difference, of course.
Absolutely. Like, if anything's going to shift,
it will be heard at the highest levels.
Yeah, Jim Chalmers is listening to it right now.
They said that Jim Chalmers would never listen to it.
They were right. Yeah. Jim's busy. He's too busy talking to Michelle Bullock.
Yeah. I wonder what Waitley's been saying about that. Waitley on Maxwell would definitely be appointment listening. He'd really bring out some of his top shelf liquor for that.
That's Maxwell. Are we
enough with Maxwell. Let's move on.
Enough with Maxwell. Let's see what happens in the next game. We'll see what happens in the next game, because he'll be out. But actually, it doesn't matter if he gets out for a duck against
He should probably, honestly, he should probably just go and play the golf, fall off the cart sit the next match out, and then come back for the semi.
Yeah, yeah, he might as well just have a relax. He is now the new luxury player, right? He's the Mesut Ozil of Australian cricket.
Yeah, just sort of mopes around the field with his sunken eyes, looking tired. And then just comes good occasionally, just explodes into action.
Anyway, that's Maxwell. The other point that we need to touch on for this episode is the wonderful dismissal of the least likely Sri Lankan sounding bloke, Angelo Matthews, who was timed out. And what was, so there are a number of things, and for those of you who don't understand, you know, you have 2 minutes to get from the boundary
to
be in a position to receive the ball. And obviously Matthews didn't put his helmet on like prior to walking out, right? So it was only when he was standing out ready to face the ball and putting his helmet on that he realized that the strap didn't work, or the strap was kind of faulty or whatever. And then what's his name? Who's the Afghan guy who's got his own colourful history? He obviously appealed. And Murray Erasmus. Al Hassan.
Shakib, yeah.
Also known as Shakib. So what, and Erasmus sort of checked, asked him sort of twice if he wanted to follow through with the appeal.
Yeah. They did a lot of checking, just wanted to make sure. And he was given out, which, well, I think it's good. Like, I mean, people are like, yeah, Alan Donald came out and was like, oh, I don't want to see that sort of thing in our game. I mean, he's the actual Bangladeshi fast bowling coach. So he's sort of berating his own team for making the appeal. And it's like, well, you know, the rules, and yeah, all these other people like Usman came out and was like, oh, it's ridiculous because, you know, he didn't, it's not like, you know, if he'd been in the position of kind of, going out and wanting to change his helmet after he'd already faced a ball and taking more than 2 minutes to do it, no one would have said anything. But it's like, well, that's not what the rule is. I mean, the rule is you've got to take sort of less than 2 minutes to sort of take guard.
Sorry, you were saying the rule is there, right?
Yeah, we just had the Zoom mandated drinks break, but the rule's there. You know, if someone's in violation of it, then I mean, why not appeal? It's kind of all this stuff about, oh, it's not in the spirit of the game. It kind of goes back, bring back memories of the Bairstow dismissal.
Yeah,
where it was another kind of grey area where the team appealing kind of enforced the rules as written, and we were all fine with it. So why shouldn't we be fine with Bangladesh doing this to Angelo Matthews?
Yeah,
sounds good. I mean, you gotta have a decent helmet. I mean, Sri Lanka needs to look into its helmet program. It's got to look into every part of its cricket program based on its performance at this World Cup. But you can't be sending blokes out with busted helmets.
Yeah, I mean, if its procurement strategy is no good, then they've got to set up some working groups, do some PowerPoints. Just create an RFP and probably go on a world tour to go and experience
the product. Exactly, and, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Study, make a decision in like 2 years' time.
Yeah, research to a full RFPs procurement process.
Yeah.
Pay some consultants way too much money to provide some advice that will be ignored.
Yeah.
Produce some white papers that will not be read.
Yeah,
and then sort of go from there.
Yeah, I mean, but to your point about the rules, and the rules are there. Like, I don't understand. It's like if people don't like the rules, or rather the laws in terms of being timed out, the MANCAD law and whatnot, why don't they just like remove those laws or delete them?
Can we just delete, control alt delete, just get rid of them? just vote them out.
Probably need a referendum. All of the test playing nations, it has to be a majority of them voting in favor. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. So all this wailing and gnashing of teeth about it not being in the spirit of the game, and I agree with you, is complete rubbish.
Yeah. It was great theater, of course, just if only for the spectacle of Angelo Matthews firing up as he was being dismissed, and then obviously afterwards with all the stuff that he said to the media and on social media. It's what you want from the sport. Men being angry.
I mean, what uh And it's good that it was obviously Shakib that made the appeal, because I he's got form as being a, bit of a hothead. Particularly that time when I think it was during a test match, but he didn't like the decision that had been sort of given by the umpire, so he sort of picked up the stumps and walked off. Just, you know, it's like, again, just another kind of hothead. And it's good that, you know, I mean, hotheadedness has no color.
Exactly. It's one of the great unifying forces in global culture. Yeah. And it's great to see a hothead get ahead.
Yeah. You know? No, it is. It is.
Get up.
I did look at some of the other ways, or some of the other instances of batters being timed out. And while they're not in international games, they're in first class cricket. And probably two of my favourites are AJ Harris, who played in a game with Nottinghamshire and Durham, and he had a groin strain and took too long to walk out. So I guess he should have just channeled, you know, well, obviously
it took place. Glenn Maxwell.
Exactly.
He should have just sort of faced the ball from the boundary.
And in a different game, Hemalal Yadav was timed out because he was chatting to the coach on the boundary edge.
Yeah.
So I mean, God knows why the two of them were in such a deep conversation that they didn't realize that he had to go into bat.
It's not what I would expect from Yadav, knowing him as I do. But
he is your Maxwell. You guys are you and Yadav quite tight.
you worked sort of workshop the pronunciations of those names before you got on air, Timsy?
Who did I workshop them with? No, I did not.
Yeah, that's good.
I mean, AJ Harris. I didn't really have to workshop that.
Well, you pronounced it quite fluently, so I was impressed by that. I mean, it's a question of, you know, how much talking you should do. I mean, obviously, if you take kind of the no footwork under 9A's approach, you have actually quite an extensive conversation with the batsman who's just been dismissed when you're going on. And it's all about, you know, that fat bloke's actually really fast. Or, you know, it's like, there's the big crack in the concrete pitch or whatever. Whereas, you know, the professionals, you notice, don't actually say anything to each other because they've got their plans. They don't need to talk. There's no need for verbal communication. They can just communicate it all with their eyes. And so, I mean, 2 minutes seems like ample time to get to the middle of the ground and, you know, take guard and get ready to face the first ball.
Yeah, I mean, presumably they keep an eye on how the game is progressing. It's not like they're then immediately padding up or anything like that, right? Like they've at least got one pad on. They've got the maybe they've got the box on as well. I don't know. They're certainly not hanging around in their cities, just kind of waiting for the tea break or anything like that. Like, you know, I guess
the sort of, you know, a counter perspective might be, you know, there's so much sort of laxness in the enforcement of overrates and stuff like that in cricket that to kind of pedantically insist upon this as the thing that has to be done within the mandated time frame, where you're letting so many other things go and you kind of apply these sort of nothing penalties to different teams on the, you know, the fair play tables and all this kind of stuff, and, you know, qualification for the, you know, World Test Championship, you sort of get docked points or whatever for that based on the speed of your overrate in Test cricket. It's kind of like, well, you know, we've got to have some consistency here. But the difference, I guess, is that this is actually within the laws of the game and is a recognized mode of dismissal. So, you know, if you fall foul of it, then too bad.
Yeah. Because as I just said, like, it's there. Like, if they don't want people to be dismissed by that means, then get rid of the law.
Right. Yeah, no, I'm glad we've sorted that one out. And so the semis are basically, well, I guess there's still the question of who's going to grab the fourth spot. I mean, it's kind of between, I was actually sort of hoping that Afghanistan would win, because then that would nudge out the Kiwis from the fourth spot, because
they would have been ahead. It would make the last couple of rounds more interesting, yes.
Yeah, I mean, they're still, I think Afghanistan is still in with a chance. I mean, are they playing again? No. Yes, they are. I don't know. Anyway, so there's still some question of who's going to take the final place for the semis. How do you feel about this format, having kind of gone through, you know, almost all of the, you know, round robin group stage or whatever we're calling it?
Yeah.
And now getting ready for the semis. Probably feel a bit better about it now that we've qualified for the semis, and we've, you know, an Australian batsman has managed to produce the best one day innings of all time. Feels like a pretty good format now, right?
Yeah, you can certainly warm to it. It's as though by having the extended pool stage as this is, like, it's probably not bad. And I guess given how much cricket there is within the tournament itself, it's quite good having a game every couple of days, because even though you know, you're not that interested in watching South Africa, Bangladesh.
You went for Bangladesh. It was like, oh, are you going to go for Bangladesh, or are you going to go like Sri Lanka, Netherlands? Because, you know, it's interesting you went for that one.
Well, yeah. But so, you know, I mean, like all these things, it's good. It's good that it's on. I think the format's good.
Just do a bit of sort of random laughing in the middle of a patch of commentary, a la Matthew Hayden when he's on air with like some Indian bloke who is obviously way more educated and sophisticated and cosmopolitan than he is. He's just like, that's his kind of his mode of interacting with brown people. But good. It's great to witness. So he's done well. Colo's done well. Watto
and Finchy.
He's looking a bit fat. He's definitely porked up. That photo that I sent you of post-match commentary today, where they're kind of looking quite droopy. I mean, Watto's obviously, you know, held to the, he's sized up in the shirt department, and stuck to that.
But they look like, it's like someone doesn't quite have the aspect ratio right, although they're all just a bit munted.
Yeah, like their legs are sort of a little bit shriveled.
It's kind of wasting
diseases below the waist. They've still got the classic look that we've spoken about earlier, the sort of early 2000s, you know, best, you know, wedding party look.
We're all gonna have
the same outfit. We're gonna go to, you know,
Jackson's on George.
Anyway, so that was so good. World Cup, good one, huh? Yeah.
Yes. Well, look, let's see what happens for the semifinals, and we'll be back. We'll be back soon. But
yes,
thank you for your time.
Thank you.
For your effort. Thank you very much. Thank you for the tweet,
of course, that got one like from a porn account. Very topical, and I thought dark. Definitely went in a dark direction, but I thought it was justified.
Yes.
Given Australia's military history in Afghanistan and Ben Robert Smith's now confirmed status as a war criminal. We're trying to steer clear of potentially defamatory imputations on this podcast. But
this is going straight to Bruce McWilliam. He's sending emails about it. He's sending emails about it.
Yeah, good one, Timsy. All right, talk to you later, mate.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.